to all of you. Paul has already expressed that. You honor the convention of the Synod by being here, especially those of you who represent the non-Lutheran media and don't have to cover conventions on Saturday afternoon. But we're happy to have you here and hope you're having a good time. And to those of you from the other Lutheran churches, I noticed the lady with the pretty hat. We've already talked this morning from the American Lutheran Church. Those from within the Missouri Synod, it's good to have you here, and I hope you're enjoying the convention and will continue to do so. I feel very good about my re-election. It's never been a job that I coveted. When I was nominated 5 years ago, I was extremely happy in the calling that I had, which was as a teacher of theology and a seminary administrator, and yet I was elected, and this time I was elected again, and I see that as a reaffirmation of God's call to me, and I accept that with thanks and with the prayer that the church will move forward during the next 3 years. I also see it as a rather strong affirmation of the kind of direction that the administration has tried to give the Synod, which is essentially a direction that I would characterize as being very, very solid in the doctrinal commitments, confessional positions of the Synod, while at the same time being eager to move forward in mission outreach, in attempting to use new technologies, new organizational patterns, new ways of listening to people and following their lead, and a recognition that the church of tomorrow will probably look somewhat different from the church of today. I said look somewhat different. I think in its substance it will have the same Lord, it will have the same gospel of forgiveness in Christ, it will have the same Lutheran doctrine, but there will be more blacks, there will be more Asians, Hispanics, more women. There will be people who will reflect the mainstream of American society. And I see my reelection, I think, as a very strong commitment on the part of this convention and this Synod to move boldly into that kind of a future. I think it's going to be a very, very good convention as well. I'm not sure what the highlight of today's sessions has been so far, but I rather suspect it's the fact that the delegates are becoming well acquainted with each other in ways they haven't done before in conventions of the Synod, and they're talking about what concerns them as Christians where they live, and before this convention has ended, they're going to feel very good about themselves and about their church, and I do believe they'll go home with a sense that they have chosen leaders and adopted a platform for action that represents what they perceive to be truly God's will for the Synod. So, I thank you for honoring me with your presence, and I would invite you to ask any questions of me that you might care to. Paul, would you mind receiving those questions for me, and then we'll do the best we can.
Obviously, there have been some concerns expressed in the days and weeks before the convention that we've all heard about you being too liberal and stepping up under your president and that sort of thing, and as well the close election. Do you feel that you will make any changes at all in the coming 3 years to address those concerns?
I am not entirely sure it was a close election. It was a first ballot victory that I was not at all sure that we would have. It was a close first ballot victory, and I acknowledge that fact. As far as changes are concerned, to address the questions, I do not see any particular changes mandated by the action of this convention in terms of the direction of this church. There are obviously some people with a lot of questions and a lot of concerns, and I want to find out more about them. You know, what is it that leads you, if you feel that something is wrong with what I'm doing or what others are doing, what is it that we can do better to serve you better and to move the church in the direction that you think it should go? So in that sense, Pam, I'm sure that you will find me listening more intently than I perhaps have been able to in the past, but I see no major changes in direction. If anything, I feel reaffirmed in the direction that I have been going. I think that you have seen in the last 2 years one of the strongest, most concerted efforts in the history of a major denomination to oust its leadership, and you saw it fail. And in my judgment, that's a resounding victory, a reaffirmation of the sense of direction that the church has been going. Even so, you're going to look pretty hard for any substantive differences between me and Dr. Sauer, or Dr. Wollenberg, Dr. Preuss, Dr. Zones, the other people who were nominated. They are fine people. They are good theologians. Dr. Sauer and I have worked together for many years, years that go back to the years before we were in the administration of the Synod, and I know of no major substantive differences in the theology or perceptions of what the church ought to be. So I think the convention, Pam, will begin a listening process, a healing process, to the extent that that's necessary. But I expect it to be strongly affirmative of the kind of thing that we've been talking about, namely the need to address the present and the future with the strengths of the past, but a very future-oriented kind of church body.
Other questions?
What are your feelings about the first vice president? With those people who are running, do you feel that you can work with all of them?
Well, believe it or not, in a political church like Missouri Synod, I have said and I have spoken truthfully. I have never, in any election which I have been a candidate, have I ever endorsed any one person for the vice presidency. I have always said consistently, and I say so right now, that whomever this convention elects as the first vice president will be someone that I will work with and work with as well as I can. And I'm sure that they will all, in their own individual ways, bring a lot of gifts to that position. I have a particularly high regard for Dr. Menicky, one of the men nominated from the floor. He has served with distinction in a number of ways. He's a man who complements my style and my background in many ways. I think that each of them, in their own way, brings strength to the position. A man like Pastor Zones has a well-known interest and zeal for missions, and that's certainly in tune with the kinds of things we're trying to do. Dr. Wollenberg is an excellent theologian. He's been in synodical leadership positions for a long time, and I know that he and I can work well together. Dr. King is a very talented black pastor of a white congregation in Missouri, while serving also as a professor at Lincoln University, I believe, Pam, not too far from our backyard. And I think it was one of the nicest things that the Synod ever did years ago, when we had a black Lutheran Church Missouri Synod man as a vice president in the person of Dr. Lavallee, who died shortly after his election. I've no doubt left somebody out, and I didn't mean to. Which candidates, Paul, have I not commented on? I was trying to give a brief assessment of strengths. I think, in other words, each of these nominees bring strengths to the task. Dr. Meyer, I believe, is the other one, is he not? Yeah, I think he's the other one. The concern that some have had with Dr. Meyer has been with the question of the doctrine of justification. As you know, that's been under consideration a long time, and I understand from Dr. Meyer that the efforts that have been made at the Fort Wayne Seminary to clarify his understanding of that doctrine have gone very, very well. And I'm so pleased to hear that, because I believe that if he is the choice of the convention, he will be able to assure the convention that he has no difficulties with the doctrinal position of our church. He, too, is just a fine man. He has been a very loyal active colleague as a vice president. He does whatever he's asked to do and does it well. So I think the church has really given me and others some fine people in these six candidates, and once again, I'm not asking for any one of them. I will be happy to work with any of them.
Other questions? And another one?
About the Fort Wayne Seminary, in the press release sent out last week that they had received accreditation for 5 years instead of what apparently is a usual.
Yes.
And it had, they had a notation that had to do with your visit to the seminary, as I understood it.
Mm-hmm.
Saying that that raised a lot of concern, and do you plan to do anything about that? I mean, I think they're sort of hoping for some sort of an apology or something.
Well, someone's given you wrong information, and it may be some folks associated with Fort Wayne. I have read the report of the accreditation people, and having been a seminary professor and president, have some experience with the meaning of a notation. A notation, frankly, serves an administration of a school very well by allowing it to have a handle to attract the attention of others to concerns that need attention. A notation in no way implies that the quality of education is inferior or anything of that kind. It's merely a way of calling attention to something that does need to be addressed. And the notation does not make reference to me. It rather makes reference to the Board for Professional Education Services. And frankly, the ATS Accreditation Agency has had a rather negative opinion of the Lutheran Church and Missouri Synod's way of administering its colleges and seminaries for a long, long time. It goes back to the St. Louis Seminary, and there's a certain element in that association that has to be mollified by saying negative things about the way the Missouri Synod tries to lead its seminaries. So it tends to give our seminaries a notation on denominational interference in the work of the seminary. That's the notation that Fort Wayne received. I think, to some extent, that's a political move on the part of the Association of Theological Schools to remind the Missouri Synod that it still doesn't like the fact that we expect our seminaries to be orthodox and all of that. The Fort Wayne Accreditation Report is an excellent report. It is an excellent seminary. It has a strong mission spirit, a good spirit of theology, and a lot of people have written a lot of things about the seminary that I wish they hadn't said. They've tried to draw the seminary into politics, which is a very hazardous position for a seminary to be in. And of course, some of the men on the staff are highly involved in the politics of the Missouri Synod, and they sort of bring that on themselves. But it's a good seminary. The pastors who are trained there receive an excellent education. And I had already written the president of the seminary, Dr. Preuss, prior to the convention to arrange a date in the schedule for next fall when I can be on campus visiting with the board and the faculty and the student body in a what you would call a normal visit to the campus, just to listen, to become acquainted, to see how I can help to strengthen the seminary. That's a bylaw of the church, asks the president to do that periodically, and I'm looking forward to doing that. The tensions, there have been some severe tensions there. There's no doubt about that. No one denies that. And they don't all go away overnight. But my goodness, they've been blown way out of proportion. And I'm satisfied that all of us who had any role in that situation at all have put those issues behind us. And we've said to the president and the Board of Regents, We understand, we know you're trying hard, and we wish you well as you continue to deal with those differences. Besides, a number of the principals involved have left the campus community, and I think just the ordinary expectation would be that peace and quiet will reign supreme, at least to a larger degree, in the future than it has in the past.
Other questions? Several have come in since we began. Happy to have you introduce yourself, the young lady here.
Yeah. My name is Sandra Chapman. I'm from Wish TV News
8. Oh, it's nice to have you here.
Okay. And this is your camera. Okay. Yeah. Anyone else back there that hasn't had a chance to ask a question or be introduced? What, Debbie?
Thank you very much for
the right, other questions? Yes.
Scott Benjamin from Cornerstone. This is my first visit to a synodical convention. We picked up, and you mentioned in your comments, there seems to be a lot of concern with centralization in the synod. And you addressed the fact that you did not see that, but what do you perceive as causing this perception among some of the delegates or amongst the synod?
I think, well, I gave one example in my speech. The fact that a bylaw was put in place largely at the advice of synod's attorneys, as I understand it, in 1981, that when an executive has fallen out of disfavor with his board, or perhaps out of disfavor with the president, the way you go about dismissing or terminating such an executive is to seek the concurrence of the people who appointed him. And it's very typical in our church body, just as in a seminary, that when you engage a staff person, the board engages the staff person, but does so upon the recommendation of the president. So the president of the synod becomes one of the appointing authorities. And what a lot of people don't understand is that presidents don't write bylaws. Presidents are obliged in the Constitution to carry out the resolutions of the synod. If I didn't do my concurring role, I'm not faithful to the bylaw under which I serve. So there was a disagreement, I guess you might say, between the board and me over the question of termination. Not that I ever presumed to become the board, but when I looked into the reasons why they wanted to dismiss an executive, I said, you folks haven't followed the ordinary due processes that we would expect in this case. I had a committee of district presidents appointed to visit. Their unanimous recommendation was the board has not tried to work these things out. Well, my pastoral role there says to say try to work them out. And I don't know, it goes on and on and on. And finally, the board still says after a year and a half, we want to dismiss the man. And in the meantime, submitted an action to this convention that already then misrepresented my role. At which point I said, if the role of the president is being challenged in this way by you folks, and you haven't really tried to work this out in a collegial way, I'm simply going to ask the convention about it and let the convention devise a way. I'm not going to veto your decision, but we're going to let the convention tell us what to do. Well, I think that was misinterpreted. People have reported that to the church in inaccurate ways, probably because they didn't understand that this is a matter of giving an executive due process. No one in a position, whether it's your position or a pastor's position, would want to serve in an arrangement whereby you could walk into a meeting of your board and have someone say, I move that we fire John Doe, and the vote passes 6-5, and he's fired. That is not recognized as fair practice, even in the secular institutions of the land, let alone in a church. So that's the kind of thing we're dealing with. But I think it looks like centralization. And then I think I've been so involved. I get into everything. I have tried to cheerlead just about every project in the church. And we've needed a lot of cheerleading. When I became president in 1981, we were a very divided church. We felt bad because we had had a splinter in the 70s and a lot of people were still nursing their wounds. And I've tried to get the church moving, tried to get people talking to each other. And I suppose I've been too visible for a lot of people's liking, perhaps come across as too pushy in the sense of wanting more money for this and more action for that. And I think it fosters the notion that the president has been a little bit too strong. But the power of the president is largely that of communication, not authority. In the usual sense of the word. If there's anything that all Missouri Synod people agree upon, I guess, other than that we have a good pension system, it's that we don't want centralization. You know, we don't want a hierarchy. We don't want a dictator. And those concerns have been around a long time, and we need to be sensitive to them.
We defer to Ann.
Sure.
And make this the final question. We're really short on time, President.
Unfortunately.
What are your hopes, or what direction do you see?
The expectation is, of course, that the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America will become a reality in January of 1988. And so far, the consultations between Missouri's representatives and those of the Commission for New Lutheran Church have been extremely positive in terms of working out a cooperative, a system of cooperative arrangements at various levels when the Lutheran Council ceases to be. We see, I see very strongly, and I don't see any indications to the contrary, that we will continue to be full partners in agencies like Lutheran World Relief, one of the finest organizations of its kind in American Christendom, helping the poor and the hungry and so on. I see our full and continued strong participation in partnership with the other Lutheran churches in immigration and refugee work, also one of the finest departments in the country. And we know we don't agree on certain doctrinal issues, like the authority of Holy Scripture. We're apart on certain dimensions of that question. The role of women in the ministry of the church is something we're not in agreement on. We don't see the question of intercommunion with people of a different confession in at all the same way as the other Lutheran folks apparently are moving closer and closer to intercommunion of limited kinds with Roman Catholics and Reformed Christians. Nevertheless, I see Missouri addressing fellow Lutherans as part of the same family of people who consider the confessional basis of the Lutheran Church to be our own and theirs as well. I see us seeking to be characterized by friendship and goodwill. I hope that we can address differences and try to resolve them over the years in an amicable way. So I see a combination of, you might say, comfort with our personal, our ecclesiastical, theological position on the one hand, and sticking with that very strongly, but endeavoring in ways that don't compromise doctrine to be closely related to other Lutherans in areas such as those I mentioned. The relationship is really quite good today at the denominational level. Dr. Preuss, the president of your church, is a personal friend of mine, and we're looking forward to welcoming him to the convention tomorrow night.
Any closing general comments?
Well, once again, thanks for coming. You've honored us by being here, and I better get back to the small groups, the table talks. By the end of the week, I think they're going to turn a convention around. I have a feeling that this is something that other church bodies may be using in their conventions in the future if it works here. Thanks for coming, and good luck in your work on the convention.
News releases back here and some photos if you care for either. Those of you who are covering the convention and have baskets in the media center will get releases in your baskets. But if you'd like one now or if you'd like a photo or both, see me outside of the door and we'll take care of you.